There we go. Hello, Brad.
Hey, what's up, man? How's it going?
Yeah, good. Where in the world are you?
I am, well, the image behind me, that's an AI generated image of President Biden smelling Kamala Harris intensely. So I'm not with them. I am in Atlanta, Georgia right now. And I should ask you before I might go on a rant, is swearing allowed on your show? Should I refrain from swearing?
No, say what the hell you want. We're on
Okay.
Locals and we'll put it on Rumble.
I won't go too crazy.
So say whatever you want. At least Biden's not sniffing a baby.
Well, we don't know what he's doing right this minute. Anyway, we know what he'd like to be doing. It's Hunter's birthday this week. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Hunter Biden turned 54 on February 4th. They celebrated with a low-key dinner at a Beverly Hills restaurant called The Ivy. They were joined by his dead brother's son, the one whose mother he started banging, right after the kid's dad died. So that was very nice. And after the meal and giving Hunter some gifts, after dessert, he jerked off on the busboy. And it's a piece of artwork. One of Biden's donors bought the busboy and is now an ambassador to Saudi Arabia. But they have no idea.
Right.
They have no idea, though, who did it, though, because all of the purchases of the art are kept secret. It's just a coincidence that they all end up ambassadors and
Right. We've got
donate
to
to Biden.
go. We've got to go over this more slowly. There was too much for
Yeah, I can be rapid
my.
fire, so definitely.
Let's go back to what you said. Who died? Sorry, the dead.
So Hunter, the nephew, his Beau Biden, the good son, I guess, is the way it's framed in the media, the one who died, his son came to Hunter's birthday dinner.
Okay.
And with President Biden, I'm sure a lot of sniffs went into that head, probably wore out a little bald spot on the kid's head sniffing it. But that is the son of the brother who, after the brother died, Hunter started having sex with his brother's wife and that kid's mother. It's just such a weird dynamic in that family.
How soon after the death did that happen?
They make it seem like it wasn't going on before, but it certainly seems like it was going on as he was dying. And then the way they reported it happened almost immediately after. And the story is that they were both grieving together. They were losing someone they loved. And of course, they fell inside of each other accidentally, and they continued to do it. His brother died, and they were in a relationship for like 6 months. Then he starts cheating on her with the stripper who he had a kid with that the entire family just despises the existence of and refused to acknowledge. I mean, that was the saddest thing I had ever seen. The way they, it's not that kid's fault, and the fact that they refused to acknowledge it was disgusting to me. And they still called President Biden decent. But yeah, he cheated on his brother's ex-wife, who he was sleeping with after his brother died. And then they got into a fight. And this is actually what led to the gun charges that he got, because he was having a conflict with her when he went and bought that gun when he was on drugs and lied about being addicted to drugs. That all happened around the same time.
Wow, that has sunk in and I'm speechless.
It's a wild, wild story.
How did it get to this? I mean, where did it all start to become not a normal family? Or was it ever a normal
I think a
family?
long time. Actually, I think I've identified the origin of Hunter's problems. That had something been different, he might have had a different life. I think that it all stems from the fact that he never got to be the one who dad invited into the shower when he was 14, like his sister did. And he always wondered why his dad didn't love him enough to molest him like his father molested his sister, which she wrote about in her diary. Nobody ever talks about that,
All
She's
right,
never
slow down, slow
denied
down, slow down again. You're saying that
it.
Joe Biden
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
molested his own daughter.
Well, okay, so I should say I'm implying molesting, the fact that he's
Okay.
showering with a 14-year-old girl. And his daughter wrote in her diary that she was messed up sexually because her father used to shower with her when she was 14 years old. This was something that Project Veritas, a little while back, they got a hold of her diary. And they exposed some of it, and they had some audio talking to Ashley Byan herself, and she was very angry. She wanted it back, but there's never been a denial about any of it, and there's never been a fact check. It seems to be true based on all the reporting and all the evidence out there, and it fits perfectly with, I think, what we see from Joe Biden. I mean, he seems like a creepy, creepy guy to me. Not just an old man who's out of it, like a creepy guy.
Yeah, so I've done a lot of research on the Clintons.
Yeah.
And that really opened my eyes was, you know, seeing him. He was like a serial sexual assaulter, cokehead governor of Arkansas. Yeah, his brother got busted buying drugs, all that stuff.
They're compromised, these people.
Yeah, so is that's what I was getting at. If Clinton was given the White House because he was so corrupt and decadent, Is it the same for Joe Biden? Is that why he's been given it?
I think that's probably the way they try and control people. I don't think they want someone in there that isn't compromised, because that's their leverage. These people who are kind of outside of government, or whether they're the administrative state, or whether they're people like Klaus Schwab or whoever. I just think that, for me personally, I don't vote in federal elections. I'll vote locally. But like federal elections, I just haven't been inspired to. And I feel like once politicians reach a certain level, they might go in with good intentions. Some of them are just created and put to fill a role specifically. Like they have these training activist schools and Manchurian candidate stuff. But others might go there with good intentions. But once they reach a certain level and get a certain amount of influence, somebody's going to drop something in their drink, take some photos of them doing something inappropriate, and they're going to be compromised. They're going to use the, what's it called? It's like, I can't remember. It might be MICE, but there's the acronym that the CIA uses to turn people into double spies. And it's all about exploiting their weaknesses with women or with men or their financial problems or whatever attachments they can leverage to gain control over them. And I think there's 0% chance that they're not aggressively doing that with anybody with a little bit of influence.
Yeah, so I got in trouble for talking about Hunter Biden's laptop a while back, and I got in even more trouble for talking about Clinton and Prince Andrew and Epstein.
Dude, yeah, me too. Yeah.
Did you? What did you research lead you to in that one?
We got kicked off of WSB radio years ago. So when Trump ran for president in 2016 against Clinton, my presumption going in was that we have a family of pedophiles on both sides. And so I went and looked in. I can't remember when I first heard about the Jeffrey Epstein thing. I know you've done some work on Jeffrey Epstein too, but I started reading about Jeffrey Epstein, and then I hate the media and they lie all the time. So I just went straight to the court files, and I read like thousands of pages of court documents. I talked to the lawyer of like 10 of the victims, and I read all the depositions. And when I came out of all of that research at the time, Trump looked a lot better than Clinton. Okay, nobody looks great. Trump looked a whole hell of a lot better than Clinton. Clinton's behaviors and the situations, very hard to explain away. And every video I made, it would be demonetized. And ultimately, we would talk about this stuff on WSB up until I think it was 2019, when I can't remember, Leon Black, maybe it was, one of Epstein's buddies, who later was busted for like giving him money, bought Comcast Cable, which owned WSB. We were gone like 2 weeks later. it's like so crazy.
Yeah, Leon Black, wasn't it like hundreds of millions that he gave?
It was a lot of money, I think. It didn't look good for him, but
he said, you know, he said it was for financial advice and tax planning.
Right, yeah. That's what you call sex with the minors. It's financial advice again.
So it was under Trump's presidency that a lot of the Epstein stuff was allowed to come out, it seems to me.
Yeah. No, go ahead. I want to hear what you had to say. You're like right up my alley here. I love this stuff.
It just seems to me that more damage was done to the Clintons from it. It was advantageous to let it out under his presidency. And now we've got Biden covering it up. We've got Maxwell doing yoga in a soft federal prison. Probably she's going to probably get out on appeal.
probably leading a sex trafficking ring in prison. She might get out on appeal too. And her brothers are going around giving interviews. Have you seen any of those?
No, I've not watched them, but I've heard that they have been doing so.
It's like an organized press campaign to rehabilitate her image.
Yeah. She loves animals and the ocean and all that
right.
crap.
Yeah. She only has sex with animals. What you said a moment ago, like that struck me because, so I have a video pinned to the top of my Twitter that I made in like 2016 before it was okay for the mainstream media to talk about Jeffrey Epstein. Like when we started talking about it, it wasn't okay. But then at a certain point in time, it became okay. And here's what my view of why that was. Before, it was so obviously a Clinton scandal, so they had to bury it. And actually, the video clip that I have at the top of my Twitter page is Brian Stelter of Reliable Sources. You know, who people think he's a bad journalist. He's not a bad journalist. He's a good propagandist is what he is. And he got fired from CNN, but he got a promotion. And he is now working with, I think it's the Stanford Conservatory, where he's working personally with young journalists without scrutiny. So he actually has more influence over the future right now, and nobody's watching him. That's what I don't think we realized about Stelter. He went up, but he's saying in this interview, I think it was Kayleigh McEnany before she was Trump's press secretary, who brought up Jeffrey Epstein and Clinton's, the number of times he'd been on the plane and a few other things. And immediately, as soon as she brought it up, this is the thing they do. Stelter goes, oh, you're not going to start bringing up this Pizzagate fake news. They just shut it down. They associate it with Pizzagate so that people are afraid to even look at it, and they bury it. Because had it come out then, Clinton's look awful. Fast forward a little bit. Trump's president, he puts, I think, is Alexander, what's the guy's name? The guy who was the federal prosecutor in Florida that ended up giving Epstein the sweetheart deal back in
Costa.
Yes, that's right. Acosta. So Trump puts him in his cabinet, right? And so now the media can spin it to make it look like it's a Trump scandal, especially with the Clintons out of the limelight. And the way they spun it was, oh, wow, Acosta gives Epstein the sweetheart deal and Trump rewards him by putting him in his cabinet. But the reality of that, if you read the court documents, is that the investigative team, the police, Acosta, they were bullied, harassed, threatened. Witnesses dropped out. I think one investigator died. And all of the people who the evidence were building the evidence and that they relied on to testify were dropping like flies because of Epstein's goon squad. And it reached a point where Acosta was going to get nothing or he was going to give him this deal. And so it wasn't him helping out his buddy Trump by giving Trump's buddy Epstein something. It was him just trying to get this fucking creep, excuse my language, for something. And I don't know if he's a good guy. He might not be. But that seems clear to me when you read those court documents. But of course, the media never tells the truth.
I love that Alex Jones clip where he's in court. He talks about. Yeah.
he's great. He's hilarious.
So totally. Do you think, you know, we saw the Epstein case in the news again recently. Do you think it's going to keep cycling in and out like that?
I think as long as they can make it attach it to Trump, I think they will continue to do so. Like the Rolodex of issues where they smear him as a child, you know, sex crime like that, or the racist. So that's in the Rolodex until a Clinton or somebody else who is on their side or that they like is in the spotlight. So yeah, I think we will keep seeing it.
But when Trump gets back in, how's that going to play out then?
Well, I think that they're going to keep talking about it. I think that because you can associate this with the E. Jean Carroll thing. So any type of claim that he committed a sex crime. I don't know if you know much about the E. Jean Carroll claim against him, where he was ordered to pay her like $81 million. It's the stupidest case you've ever. I mean, it's such a fraud. It's unbelievable. This woman is crazy, as she's a performer. And do you know the story behind E. Jean Carroll? Not to go too
off track. No, tell us, please.
So E. Jean Carroll is a woman who, this has been in the news the past couple of weeks because they love to say that Trump hates women. And I think that can always be brought in and connected with Epstein. And so E. Jean Carroll is this woman who used to be like a writer on SNL for one season, who claims that 27 years ago, and she made this claim after New York changed a law where they suspended this, the statute of limitations for 1 year. And they did this specifically so people like her could make accusations against Trump that could end up being in the news cycle going into the 2024 election. I mean, that's exactly why they did it. And so, of course, this woman who is probably recruited by one of these organizations to do this claims that 26 years ago, she has no evidence, she has no calendar, nothing, absolutely zero except her word to prove it. And it's a civil case. It's not criminal. And so she says that they went to this department store, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's like, I don't know New York City that well, but it's on like that, the most popular street in New York City where all the Christmas displays are, and the most visited department store in the country, right? And always full. And she says that Trump took her into this department store, and they were just hanging out, having a good time shopping and joking around for some reason, because they ran into each other on the street, happenstance. They get up to this floor, and for some reason, nobody is there. Like, the one time, there is zero other people in this department store. And, you know, another coincidence, the changing room, which is usually locked, when you look at the protocols and you talk to people, you have to go get somebody to unlock it for you. A door is just wide open, just waiting to bring someone in there to get raped, you know? So those circumstances, you know, kind of strange, but she says that they go up to that floor, nobody's around. He pushes her into that room and he rapes her, is what she said. And this was like a publicity stunt so they could use this narrative. They take it to a civil court, and the judge, it's only preponderance of evidence in a civil court, which means 51% have to agree that he's guilty of whatever. But the judge instructions to the jury was battery, right? So she accused him of rape and sexual battery and battery. And the judge told the jury, so here's what battery is. If you feel that Trump might have poked her with his finger anywhere on her body or like on her chin, then that is liable. He is liable. So the range of liability is super, super broad and can be nothing, right? And of course they found him guilty, because it'd be hard to say, well, he might have poked her with his finger, right? And so they find him liable, but they also disagree. They said they don't believe she was raped. And so the media takes this, right? And the next day, they're still doing it now. They've been doing it every time they put this woman back in the news. Sexual assault rapist Trump, he was held liable. And this woman goes on to CNN like a year ago, and she's talking to Anderson Cooper about this whole thing. And she starts laughing and giggling and tells Anderson Cooper that rape is sexy. I mean, she's a lunatic. Her cat is actually named Vagina. I'm thinking about accusing Trump of rape because I'd love $81 million.
Wow. I just don't understand how the legal system can be weaponized in that fashion. Dude,
it's a system of injustice. It's not a justice system. It's an injustice system right now. And it's out in the open. It's so in our, like Joe, the Biden family, not just him, but down here in Georgia, we have Fannie Willis. She calls herself Fannie, like she's French. She's not. Her name's Fannie, but she's the corrupt district attorney that is overseeing the Trump election interference racketeering trial down here. She hired her top prosecutor she's having sex with. She broke up his marriage, and she hired a guy she's banging. And then this guy, who's being paid with public money, took her on multiple vacations after he hired her using public funds. And she ran in 2020 to be district attorney. And I played this clip the other day. She literally said, Fulton County, Georgia needs a district attorney that is not having sex with their employees and that is not lining their pockets with public funds. And because the previous guy did the same thing, and she's openly doing the same thing, and everybody hashtag me too, the previous guy. But now the media, because she is against Trump in this thing, so she's the good guy. If you point out what she has openly admitted, you are racist for doing so. It's so abusive, the justice system.
Do you think this stuff has backfired, though, when it comes to Trump? Because it is so transparent what they're doing. It's just increased his popularity. There's like a martyrdom factor.
I think so. That's one thing I think about that a lot, because it seems so obvious that it's going to increase his popularity. Do you think? Like, I would think they would know that.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder.
Which then leads to another conspiracy theory as well. Intentional, right. Because anyone that you're going to go after that vehemently. I mean, even going back to the Russian stuff, the Russia stuff was so preposterous.
Dude, so stupid.
I grew up with, in here, they were telling us in England the Russians were coming. You've got to have a nuclear bomb shelter in your back garden. And they were always trying to terrify, if you burnt your toast, the Russians did it. It just seems like they fell back on that old ploy and tried to tie it to Julian Assange and tried to tie it to Trump.
And anything that Putin said. So Putin, I think a couple of weeks ago, he said that the 2020 election, there was a fraud, which there's fraud in every election. So he stated a truth about like every election. And this is what the media does. They then took that and all of a sudden to say there was fraud in the 2020 election is carrying water for Putin. It's a Putin talking point. Nobody can see that on their own. It is now you are with Putin if you point out what everybody knows.
Have you had a chance to watch, has Tucker Carlson published the interview with Putin yet?
I don't think so, but that'll be interesting.
It's trending like crazy.
Barbara Walters interviewed him too.
A lot of people did, and it's trending like crazy right now over here. And the EU is talking about criminalizing and banning Tucker Carlson from Europe.
I mean, that is wild, man. It's like there's an epidemic because of stuff like that. People see it. There's an epidemic of self-censorship. Because people are afraid to point out the obvious corruption that's in our face for fear of being branded like a racist or a domestic terrorist and canceled.
So when it comes to the weaponization of sexual offenses allegations, have you looked at the cases of Andrew Tate or Russell Brand?
I haven't looked deep into those yet. I'd love to hear about them, though. I know that there was a targeted attack. And for me, it's like... The whole hashtag MeToo thing, it does a couple of things. One, it treats people, women, it makes victimization a subjective thing and throws out all laws, which actually hurts people who've actually been victimized. Like I saw a Washington Post video that had this montage of women telling their stories. And one woman told a story of being brutally raped in an alley. And it was followed up by a woman who told how she was sexually assaulted when somebody squeezed behind her to get by in a crowded bar. I'm like, that's a disservice to the actual woman. And this is going to lead to no actual prosecution. So it's like a double-edged sword there. But what tell me about those two.
Well, with Russell Brand, I mean, he's got tens of millions of followers.
Yeah.
And his activism is centered around exposing Big Pharma and the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, he's funny.
I say that they're two of his main targets. But he does these videos regularly, and he's so eloquent the way he distills it down for average, people that I'm hooked on it. I was watching it a lot, and then all of a sudden, one weekend, these... Channel 4 it was, and the Times said they'd interviewed women from 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And, he was basically a serial rapist and all this stuff. And criminal charges are coming. But, got to hand it to him. He doubled down. He just, I think that was a shot across the bow. And he was like, F you guys. And he just... went more after them more than he's ever gone after them before in his life, speaking about the vaccines and speaking about the wars and all this stuff. And whether they're going to get one of these women to take it into the legal system remains to be seen, because it is a slow process. But
there's
again,
no way they will. They don't have any evidence. Like, this whole thing relies on not having to go and put it up to an actual court of law. It's court of public opinion that it relies. That's why they do these old claims. And I remember that now. When after this story came out, the media narrative was Russell Brand has been preparing for this for the past 10 years. And they wove this whole story about how he started to become a right-wing influencer because he knew that these accusations were coming 10 years. It's the wildest story that they came up with. And, you know, that documentary on Channel 4, which I thought was the most interesting thing, there was at least one, maybe two, of the women in the documentary that weren't the actual women making the accusation. They were actors hired to play the women in a documentary. That's a little weird.
Yeah, for a man who slept with as many women as he has, to go over his entire life history, there's going to be some disgruntled people in there. And yeah, I hope that he doesn't get arrested. And
you're right. He is eloquent, though. He's such a good communicator. That's why they're going after him.
Yeah. And then Andrew Tate, he was speaking about vaccines and wars and all that kind of stuff as well. And something similar happened with him. So it just seems that it used to be the lone gunman would take you out. But now it's a sexual offense allegation that they use.
Yeah, they try to smear your reputation so nobody will listen to you and people will be afraid to associate with you. The vaccine question, too, that is one that I don't know what your position on the vaccine is. My position from the get-go was I read the Pfizer documents right when this thing came out. And so my mom had a rare illness for 18 years. She passed away a few years ago. She was told that she would die in 2 years when she was first diagnosed years ago. And I learned watching my dad and my mom that you have to, when you get in a situation like that, you have to ask more questions and you have to figure things out for yourself when the medical establishment that you have learned to trust to help you has given up on you. And they're both an inspiration, but coming into the pandemic, like I had like a background of like questioning this stuff all the time. And so I'm reading all the Pfizer documents and the trials that they did to get their efficacy rate high, 99% efficacy, not 99% efficacy. Dr. Fauci sounds like he eats a bowl of cigarettes for breakfast every morning. They only allowed the youngest, healthiest people in these trials. And it's expressly stated in their own documents on their webpage. They excluded the most vulnerable, the pregnant, the older people from these trials because of the risk to them. And then after they did the trials, got the numbers that they could use for propaganda purposes, the very first people they then gave the vaccines to when they rolled them out were the same vulnerable people that they excluded from the trials due to risk. And that to me is just, it's just so, so deceptive and wrong that I told people, look, I don't think they're trying to kill people with a vaccine. I know some people think they're trying to kill people. I believe that they are trying to expedite the development of this mRNA technology that they have long believed to be this life extension technology, and they need human subjects. So they rigged up this testing, and then they just want to give it to as many people as possible as quickly as possible. I mean, they did similar stuff with polio, and they did similar stuff with it was one of the bird flus from years ago. They always try and pressure people, and when you go look back years later, it's always a lie. The numbers are always fabricated and they're full of it. I mean, Fauci's not really a good dude, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah, it seems to me that the medical industrial complex owned people like Fauci, and the whole thing was just a grab to make billions and billions and billions on something that, you know, it hadn't been trialed on people. So everybody who took it was a guinea pig. Yep. I mean, I've got a friend and his mate took it 2 years ago. He got sick right away and he died a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
And I also follow a channel called Dr. John Campbell, and he's got over 1 million subs. And in the beginning, he was kind of an advocate for it. And he said, if he knew back then what he knows now, he never would have advocated for the vaccine. He never would have took it himself. He never would have recommended it. And he's done a lot of videos recently about the excess deaths. And they reckon that the excess deaths are going to exceed the amount of people who died during the pandemic soon, if you look at it.
It's crazy.
Across the entire world. Yeah.
And what they'll never report that. What they'll do is they'll say it's hard to determine if it was a vaccine or if they developed COVID again that did it. I have a story for you related to that. So my mom and dad, they were going to doctors, different type of doctors, like a place called Shepherd Center at Emory here in Atlanta, a fantastic place. every single day of the week because of the disease my mom had was so rare that she had to retrain her brain, basically. There's something called Brzezinski cells in your brain that control the communications. That we have a thought and it just unconsciously goes to our limbs. When those die, or they eliminate that communication apparatus. So you're not paraplegic, but the connection's not there. So you are wheelchair bound and people can think you're paraplegic. So the retraining of the brain is what has to happen. And so they were going through a process of that for many, many years. And she was able to retrain her brain in many ways, but they were also surrounded by constant pressures and mandates in certain hospitals to get the vaccine. And I wasn't, like I said, I wasn't sure. Like I just, my recommendation on the show was like, I'm not going to tell anybody what to do. I'm just saying, here's what they did. This, they're definitely testing this on people. I want it to work. I'm not going to get it. I didn't get it. I want it to work because many of my friends got it. And my parents eventually got it because they had to keep going to many of the appointments they needed to go to. And my dad, after he got the second shot, developed a condition called interstitial lung disease. And I looked it up on Google Scholar, and it was actually one of the few rare diseases that they had identified and acknowledged as being a side effect of the COVID vaccine. And then a month later, his brother, my uncle, developed the exact same condition. It's a terminal condition. They're both dead. And it doesn't kill you right away, but it scars your lungs and your lungs slowly lose their ability to work. And so you can slow down the spread or the scarring with treatment. So we go to this doctor who originally diagnosed him, and I print out this study that describes my dad to a T. I mean, it was exactly like his circumstances, age, everything. And the reason I did that wasn't to be like vaccine and wave it in their face. That's not why I was doing it. I was doing it because the recommendation for people who developed this was do not get the booster. And I knew that my dad was going to get the booster pushed on him by this guy and many other doctors very soon. That's why I brought it. And so he's there talking about it. And I asked him, you know, what's the cause of this? And he said, well, you know, we don't really know. It could be black mold. It could be this. I had the house checked for black mold. There was no black mold. All of the other explanations I crossed out as the best I could. And the only one I could not was the vaccine. And when my uncle got it, it seemed really, really suspicious. So I asked this doctor, I say, is it possible that this was vaccine induced? And he flipped out. It was a visceral reaction. And he asked me if I was vaccinated. That was his response. Are you vaccinated? And I said, no. And he said, you're going to die. He starts telling me I'm going to die, that it's definitely not the vaccine. And this is a study that I found that describes my dad. What do you want me to say? And he goes, oh, if you got a study, then show it to me and I'll look at it. I mean, it's like a 65-year-old man acting like a child. And I said, I do have the study. And I pulled it out of my bag and I had the relevant parts highlighted and I show it to him. And he looks at it for a second. You know, the cognitive dissonance face people get? Like, you could see him short. And he flings it back. He flings it back at me and goes, you're going to die if you don't get the vaccine. And so we leave. I mean, it was quite a display, and it's embarrassing for the guy. We're going to get a second opinion, I told my dad, and he was definitely okay with that. And so we go to this other doctor at Emory who, when I brought it up to her, I said, look, I know I'm not supposed to say this. And she said, oh, you can say anything. It's okay. And she was super, super cool. And she said, yeah, I've seen some of this. And it was interesting because she was at a hospital that also did not let me in. Just randomly, they would change their rules all of the time. One day we go there, I have to go in there to help my dad. And they say, are you vaccinated? And I wasn't going to lie. I'm like, no. And they go, you can't come in. And I kind of caused a scene out there. I'm like, you guys have never done this before. And all of a sudden today you're doing it. And I said this to them in your bathroom. I just went in your bathroom and you had to make sure to wear your mask, make sure to wash your hands, stay 6 feet away. And then right there on the soap dispenser in your bathroom, it says, sorry, out of soap. How can I follow your rules when you're out of soap in your own bathroom? This is stupid. And then the doctor came out and escorted me in herself. So that was really cool on her to not be a dick about it. But people just fell into this trap and they didn't know what they're doing. Like my mom, they would always check your temperature, you know? And so when people have like, you know, you see people who have conditions that you don't recognize and people don't always know how to communicate with people like that because they feel sorry for them, maybe pity. And my mom was in a wheelchair. Most people had never seen this condition before. And so we would go to the hospital and they would do the temperature scan and they didn't know because my mom had a headband to help her hold her head up and they didn't know where to scan her. And so they would just go, and then they would from about 5 feet away. I remember this happened once. They go, dude, 73, you guys are good. And I'm like, 73? Really? They didn't take your temperature. They were just trying to follow these rules that were based on nothing. And you know, a lot of people like really got messed up, but they're still mad about that. There was a big fight at the Libertarian presidential primary. I moderated a few weeks ago over this very thing about whether or not it should be investigated to see. A lot of people feel crimes happened. Their family members died. And some people are just like, oh, we don't need to look at it. And I think that is like, I think that could be an issue if anybody were running, if DeSantis were to stay in it. I always thought DeSantis should go after Trump for his Operation Warp Speed thing, but he didn't really. People are still feeling very angry about all that bullshit. I've rambled for way too long. I apologize.
No, that's an absolute tragedy, man. My heart goes out to you. And it's state-sanctioned murder, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. And you got these psychopaths, sanctimonious, God-complex doctors who think that they know absolutely everything. Yeah. And if you challenge them, you know, you're going to die when actually they're the ones killing people because of the lack of information that they've really got. So the whole system is completely upside down. And these pharmaceutical companies, the blood on their hands, it's got to be approaching the blood on the hands of the military, the bomb manufacturers.
Yeah, they're the legal drug dealers. They're killing people. They might not all intend to, but I think the people who are kind of benefiting the most, I think the Faucis of the world probably have a pretty good idea about it. I mean, you go in these hospitals and you're right. The doctors learn one method. They learn what medical school teaches them to the exclusion of everything else. And the cures for anything that comes across their way it only reaches the limits of their knowledge. And to them, nothing exists outside of that, right? When in 50 years, there's probably going to be a cure for a lot of things that we don't have treatments for today. Yet that kind of escapes them that maybe, just maybe, if you opened your mind and connected with a research institute, this is what I used to do because we used to get shut down a lot with things about my mom because they didn't often know what to do. So my dad is a very resourceful guy. You know, he would go find other experts and stuff. And I say this, if you're ever in a situation where you feel like you're not getting the support, anybody listening, anybody from your medical doctor, take what your medical doctor gives you that is helpful. But when they tell you nothing can be done, tell them to go fuck themselves and know that something can be done and ask questions because there is definitely somebody somewhere who's a very smart person researching whatever the condition is that you might have or whatever you need. And I learned that very quickly because my mom got shut down a lot and I found, so she had a tracheotomy tube and it's very dangerous to get those things changed. And so it got to one point where the hospital just wouldn't change it anymore because it wouldn't fit. And I'm like, okay, so she's not going to be able to breathe soon. And so my dad and I, we found somebody at Michigan and Georgia Tech who were developing a personalized to your anatomy tracheotomy tube. And we connected them to Emory. And it's stuff like that that people don't realize they can do because we've been taught to rely on the doctor so much, but the doctors are only as good as they're helpful. After that, you got to be your own best advocate and the advocate for your family.
Yeah. The medical schools have been co-opted by Big Pharma. So they're educated in a certain way to further their interests. Yeah. I mean, I wrote a book, Deconstructing the Weed Laws. And there was a guy, a biochemist, and he said, he was diagnosed with cancer and all of his training, and he'd never come across THC oil, and some hippie woman put him onto it. And he did. Anyway, within a couple of years, he was told he was going to die. And within a couple of years, it had completely gone. and he wrote about it. And but if you look, I look back then at the Reagan administration and Bush, and what they did was they allowed one university in the whole of America to research the medicinal properties of cannabis, and they were only allowed to research negative effects.
What?
Yeah, any other university had to apply to that university to do a study, and they were only authorized if they found negative effects.
So it was just to discredit it.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Because Big Pharma didn't want any competitive products. And if you go back to the earliest weed laws, the Pharmaceutical Societies of California, they didn't want people growing free medicine in their own backyard. That's why they made it illegal in the first place.
Yeah. It's just control, man. That makes me think of, I used to play this clip on my show from the Council on Foreign Relations where one of the ladies, I think she was a former CIA agent, is talking about how people who can their own corn, sustainable living people, they're two steps away from white nationalism, domestic terror. They just want control over everything.
Yeah. Well, let's just do a bit of go back to the Bidens for a bit because we're almost at the hour. So what got you interested in them?
When he became president, he always seemed kind of like a putz to me. When he was younger, he spoke a little bit more, with a little less mental problems. I do find it funny the way that they characterize him and the way the propaganda about him works. One of my friends, I do theater, I do comedy and improv and stuff, and I have a couple of friends who are in the closet, like libertarians or Republicans. They only tell me, and then they pretend to have they, them pronouns and shit. Otherwise, I'm like, dude, drop the pronouns. Because they'll get ostracized if they openly talk about that. But one of my other friends who is a Republican sent him a video of Joe Biden mumbling and just making no sense. And my progressive friend responds by saying, dude, he's an old man who has a speech impediment. Okay. And I'm like, that is the most propagandized response to justify that. But the Biden family, honestly, Hunter's a great public relations person because my interest really peaked with all of the crazy stuff that Hunter did. I mean, just completely above the law, out in the open, abuse of power, no consequences. They act like the fact that they're charging him with a gun charge and some tax things, which he's not going to be convicted of. They act like that shows how fair the justice system is. Yeah, give me a break. And the guy, somehow he must have four hands or he must have, I tell you, I hate to be the Secret Service agent assigned to him whose job is almost exclusively to film him masturbating on a selfie cam while he smokes crack in a sensory deprivation tank, drinks slits, and chalks his own pool cue in there. I don't want that assignment at all. This is what this guy does, and it's on this laptop, and you know what they're doing with that. I tell people, do not download the contents of that laptop onto your computer. Because you don't know what might in the future be revealed from those images. Hunter Biden is never going to pay the consequences for that. But people who have that downloaded on their computer, you might get some child porn charges brought on you. And they've already brought revenge porn cases against people who have showed some of the contents of Hunter's laptop. It's wild.
Wow. The thing you touched on earlier reminded me of when Roger Clinton got caught buying coke from the undercover cop. Yeah. The cop knew that if he didn't go public immediately, his superiors would cover it up. So he did go public immediately. And then the Clintons span it to whereby Roger did, this sentence. And it shows how justice for everyone, nobody is exempt from drug laws.
Yeah. He spends a night in jail and is bailed out and equal justice under the law. Give me a break. But they play to the they play to the confirmation bias and people's avoidance of cognitive dissonance. And it works like a charm.
So what did the Bidens get up to in Ukraine?
Well, a lot of influence of the prosecutor. They have the video of him saying he's going to do that. I mean, that's the obvious thing. They put Hunter on that board of Burisma, and he was having these open calls that his dad would pop into, that after his dad popped into, I think one of the cases was a Ukrainian, after Joe popped into one of these business phone calls, gifted Hunter like $119,000 car or something like that immediately after that. It's just, if you take away the Biden name and you slap this fact pattern on any other person in the country or in the world, that person, there's probably documentaries about the corruption and abuse and the abuse of power. This person's probably spending the rest of their life in jail. It was, you know, an influence thing. Like Biden to me has always seemed like the most easily bought politician. I mean, they're all probably pretty easily bought, but he seems pretty shameless about it.
So if the Ukrainians then were buying access to Joe through the son, how were the Ukrainians benefiting from that?
You know, that's a good question. Were they, some people say, did they have Biden compromise getting them in to war? Or was maybe the other way around? Maybe Hunter was there and the influence was there to ensure this war goes on over there. I believe that this whole war over there, I know a lot of people do, has been planned for a long time in 2019. And maybe this was like a way to further that along with the help of Hunter and getting all of these powerful people over there on board. They pledged to be, Zelensky did, which is another wild story. A television president, an improbable president, becomes a real improbable president. I mean, give me a break. They pledged to be the first fully digital e-government in 2019 before all of this happened. And of course, this happens. And what do you need to be a fully digital e-government, first in the world? You need your infrastructure completely demolished. So what happens? Well, we give them just enough money and just enough weapons not to defeat Russia, but to continue fighting Russia and to continue having their own infrastructure destroyed. Meanwhile, you have this woman, I can't remember her name, Amanda something, maybe, or Samantha something, Samantha Powers. I think she is Cass Sunstein's wife, who was Obama's chief propagandist, and he wrote a 30-page paper when Obama was in office about why conspiracy theorists should be silenced and censored, basically. She is the head of the U.S. aid. And she goes on MSNBC and CNN, you know, once every other week or so, and she talks about how the silver lining in the Russia-Ukraine, it's terrible, awful what's happening. They're just destroying the youth of both these nations. But the silver lining is that it has expedited the development of the e-government, the fully digital government, through the DIA app, D-I-I-A, which has so far, at least last time she was on, over half of Ukrainian citizens have put all of their information fully on this app, and it controls all of the details and everything they must do in their life. And the goal is to get as many of them on there as possible, because that is what the future is. And it's a pilot experiment that they are now trying the same thing in, I think maybe Turkey. They're also trying, they want to expedite this thing around the world. We funded it through like $25 million. I think that was the plan all along. Destroy it, test, use it.
So I remember a lot of people talking about the project for the new American century. Do you think that America will try and invade Iran before Trump gets back in?
I don't know, man. I hope not. Nothing would surprise me at this point. They have the new axis of evil they've already created in the propaganda terms. It feels like they're building towards a global war. It also feels like they're building towards civil war in America. Like if they actually did put Trump in jail, or if they killed, I don't want anybody to die. Like I believe in redemption. I know some people do awful things, but like, you know, I'm a tender heart. I'm a tender, you know, even though I can be kind of a little crazy sometimes, but like, I don't want anybody to get hurt. I think they're just trying to bring America to a precipice. And if they were to kill Trump or put him in prison, I think that would give them the actual, you know, January 6th that they pretend happened the past couple of years.
Wow. So they might just as well have some kind of fascist dictatorship. Yeah.
Kamala, maybe.
Well, Brad, it's been fascinating. I love your energy. I love your research. And please tell the viewers where they can find you and support you.
You can find me at propagandafight.com is my website. I'm on Twitter at Freedom Act Radio, youtube.com/Brad Binkley, rumble.com/ThePropReport, rockfin.com/ThePropReport. And I believe that's it. Can I ask you a question before we get out of here?
Yeah, go for it.
What's your opinion on the king?
Oh, I'm sorry. I lost your audio then. Say it slowly.
What's your opinion on the King of England? They announced that he has cancer. What do you think about that?
Well, have you read this guy? Let me
No, yeah. What does it say?
It says, so bear in mind, this book is an interpretation of Nostradamus, and it was first published in 2006. Last one was 2015. All right, so there's a page here. It's the subject is the abdication of Charles III of England.
Wow.
And it says, this is from the quatrain of Nostradamus 1022, because they disapproved of his divorce, a man who later they considered unworthy, the people will force out the king of the islands, a man will replace him who never expected to be king. And the summary here is that King Charles III of England, weary at the persistent attacks on both himself and his second wife in the 25 years since the death of his first wife, Princess Diana, decides to abdicate in favor of Prince William. So a lot of people think this prophecy is being fulfilled because, you know, if he's got the big C, the public are going to fully understand and sympathize with him.
Yep.
As to him wanting to just step down and hand that over to William.
You know, I think he's going to abdicate too. Like the way they're telling the story makes it seem like he's going to die. Because they don't do that. Like I was reading how King George, his grandfather, they didn't only hide his illness once he was about to die from the public. They hid it from him. They didn't tell him that he was about to die. And it's like, why are they telling the public now? And then the way they reported it, where they said he doesn't have prostate cancer, but he's got some cancer. We're not going to tell you what it is. And we're not going to tell you what stage it is. And apparently the reason they told the public this is because the king wanted to, squash speculation. Well, that's a hell of a way to squash speculation by being that vague there. And I think he's going to abdicate too. I think that another reason, that's interesting that's what that book says. I think another reason that they might be doing that is because I think that he would agree to do something like this to show his illness and to step down if he were made the hero, as you suggested there, kind of this narrative. And I think he's the hero of this narrative by showing old leaders like Trump and Biden that a real man steps down and lets the younger generation take over. And you also should abdicate your throne of the Republican and Democrat Party, maybe some other old leaders around the world, and they make him the model of knowing when to call it quits.
Yeah, and there's a lot of speculation here about Harry as well, because Harry came briefly and went right back. William didn't talk to him. And it's
he already went back.
He's already back, and it's strange because the average family, if the kids were beefing and the dad, it was announced, had cancer, they'd come together to boost the dad.
Yeah.
But something really weird is going on in this family.
He's pussy whipped by old Markle. You know the story about why he did not get home in time to see the queen before she died?
No.
He was insisting on bringing Meghan with him. Like, I thought maybe he'd stuff Meghan in a suitcase this time and tell her to shut the hell up so they don't both get thrown out of the plane. But nobody wanted Meghan on the plane. And so the plane, carrying his brother and, I guess, Prince Andrew, his uncle, they just decided to leave him. Like they made the decision. They would rather be responsible for causing their brother and nephew to not get home to see their grandma before she died than they would ride on an airplane with Meghan Markle for 10 hours.
Wow. Yeah, we've interviewed Meghan's, some of her family members, her brother, sister, and they believe that she's a malignant narcissist.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
All right, Brad. Thank you again, then. And love to have a chat with you again. And you have a great rest of your day in the States.
Thank you for having me. I'd love to have you on my show sometime as well, too.
Give me a shout. I've written books about Epstein. I've written a series of them. I've written a book about Jimmy Savile recently as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, all man. Right.
Here's my friend. Later. Take care. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. What a fantastic guest. Absolutely loved his enthusiasm for going after these shape-shifting pedophile parasite new world order fucks. So power to Brad. I'm gonna tell Ash he was a great guest. Would love to get him back. And for everybody who's been watching this evening, hope you've enjoyed it. We're going to be back on Friday night with the Royal Mess, and then on Sunday night we've got the True Crime Podcast with an ex-cop who's got some extremely harrowing stories. So take care wherever you are in the world. Unleash will be back again on Wednesday, and hope to see some of you then. Thanks to Stephen Knight, and thanks to Ash also for coordinating the show.